Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we have an excellent UFC event this weekend, UFC Vegas 100. You know, it's honestly lost a lot of its fights. It could really be a lot more star-studded, but this is the final Apex event of the year, thankfully, even though we only have five more UFC events, including this one. But nonetheless, we will be dropping our predictions and previewing the entire card without Cody Garbrandt, sadly, on today's episode. Also on today's episode, we will be dropping our NFL Week 10 quick picks. We're looking to finally win a Pick'ems week. I compete against my parents every week. I compete against two of my buddies in a money league, and I compete against everyone in my college in a school-wide Pick'ems pool. And if you win, you get on the wall of fame and you get a t-shirt. And I'm yet to win. I've won my freshman year, my sophomore year, my junior year, and it's clear that I've just gotten worse at predicting NFL games. But nonetheless, we will give that a shot. We'll also look at the updated top 10 for every player position in fantasy football rankings. However, I don't even know how to phrase that. I gotta figure out a specific term to talk about that, but we'll be talking about that in a second. As well, top 10 new things in pop culture and some new UFC news. And did just want to say, I am very thankful on how the presidential election turned out. We never really get political here on the Surprise Jab Podcast, but I was very happy with the results as a young man going into the world, graduating college soon. I am very happy with who won the presidential election. And coming up on some future episodes, I am working to get some guests on this month of November. I have been seeing the episode download counts have been going on, and they usually spike when we have guests, which would make sense. I'm sure a lot of people don't like to hear me talk, and I know I need to start recording myself. I just keep getting hit with financial burdens and have been unable to buy myself a camera. But nonetheless, we get past all of that and we get into today's episode. And kicking things off, let's discuss some new UFC news. And arguably, some of the bigger ones, if you have been following the UFC world as of late, especially today, there have been rumors that Charles Oliveira and Michael Chandler may not actually be fighting, and that Michael Chandler may be pulling out. I hope this is not the case. Of course, Charles Oliveira, the number two lightweight in the world, Michael Chandler, the number seven, they are scheduled for a five-round co-main event at UFC 309 on November 16th. So coming up, literally in 10 days when I am recording this, I am really worried that that is the case. Ariel Helwani said there's nothing to really worry about, but if that is the case, who could Charles Oliveira fight? On short notice, nonetheless, and there's a couple names that come to mind. Renato Moicano, always throwing his name in the pit. He's the number 10 men's lightweight in the world. Other than that, I mean, Dan Hooker, I don't know if he's available. I don't think Gaethje or Poirier is available. And if they lose that, UFC 309 is going to be very bad, because they also lost a top 10 light heavyweight matchup between the number 11th ranked Azamat Mirzakhanov and the number 6th ranked Nikita Krylov. UFC 309 is taking hit after hit. And nonetheless, there's already issues with the fact that Jon Jones and Stipe Miocic are fighting. I have no idea what's going to take place. I hope that that all stays intact. Also, rumors circling around is that apparently Colby Covington threw his name in the hat to fight Shavkat Rakhmonov at UFC 310 for an interim title. I don't think the UFC really baited that, but he also did mention he is in talks to fight the number 3 ranked welterweight in the world, Shavkat Rakhmonov, in early 2025. And they are going to Australia in February, which would lead me to believe that's when that fight would take place. Other than some good news on the UFC realm of things, we've only had two new fights be announced, both of them women's fights. The first one, going down the women's bantamweight division, the number 3 ranked women's bantamweight and the number 4th ranked women's bantamweight, Ketlin Vieira and Macy Chison, will be wrestling. I am all over the place, guys. I want you to know that I have had a stressful exam today. I have had a group project. I have had a marketing club. I have been talking nonstop. So if I stutter over my words, I do offer an apology. As I was saying, Ketlin Vieira, ranked number 3 in the women's bantamweight division, will be taking on the number 4 ranked Macy Chison, February 22nd, an unnamed event. I'm assuming it's some random fight night. But Ketlin Vieira, coming off a loss to, gosh, who was it? Who did Ketlin Vieira? Oh, she just lost to the number 2 ranked Kayla Harrison. Macy Chison picked up a win over, I believe it was, Mauro Bueno Silva last time out. This one is probably next in line for a title shot after Kayla Harrison takes on Juliana Pena. Should be interesting. Professional records of 13-4 and 10-3. They're okay. They never really do anything special. Another matchup for you. This one for March 1st, which is apparently going down in Las Vegas. Probably assumably going to be an Apex event. Women's flyweight division, Montana De La Rosa, who is 6-5 in the UFC, will be taking on Luiana Carolina, who is 6-3 in the UFC. Decent matchup here. We'll be on the prelims. We'll probably not get that much coverage, if I'm being honest. And I wish it did. I wish we could get some more better fights being announced, but honestly, nothing too much. And we did just speak, not but the other day, about new UFC events. So I'm not too surprised that nothing's really been updated. I'm hoping everything can stay in place. As for the UFC 310 main event, I know that they have Alexander Pantoa taking on the newcomer Kaya Sakura for the men's flyweight championship. I just don't know if they want that to be the main event. There was talk that Alex Barrow might fight Magomed Ankalaev. I just think it's too soon for both of those men. Bantamweight division, featherweight division, lightweight division, middleweight division, heavyweight division, they're all booked. So your real only option here is to try and find an interim title matchup for Shavkat Rakhmonov. Now, Leon Edwards at number one, I don't think he's going to be ready. But Kamaru Usman, too, he said he's game. He said he's down. I think that's probably the most logical choice they make. Sean Brady at four would be a good choice, but I don't know if Sean Brady's really healthy now. He just fought Gilbert Burns in September. We already mentioned Jack Della Maddalena is still healing from an injury he suffered earlier in the year, and he's looking to be taking on Colby Covington early next year. Ian Garry and Joaquin Buckley are fighting. So hopefully Kamaru Usman can step up, fight for an interim belt, and how crazy would it be if he became the one to defeat Shavkat Rakhmonov? I personally don't think he will. I'm a big Shavkat Rakhmonov fan, so I do think that'll be who wins and goes on to defeat Bilal Muhammad. Big Shavkat Rakhmonov guy. That's all your new UFC news, guys. Sadly, not too many updates, but we should be back next week with even bigger updates. Speaking of updates, every single week in the NFL, fantasy football action takes place. And what I've been doing this season is looking at every week who is the top 10 per position. We, of course, have quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, defense, and kicker for all the top 10 fantasy positions. Now, I've been writing these all out in a giant Word document, but I figured I might as well just look at the app and I can take some screenshots or something to save as documents. But after week number 9, here are your current rankings heading into week number 10. At quarterback, Lamar Jackson, still the number one fantasy QB. He's gotten 225 fantasy points this year, and he's averaging 25 per game. That is insane. Might be getting back-to-back MVPs. Who knows? No shocker there. Baker Mayfield, been at the number two spot the last few weeks. He has been having an amazing year. The Buccaneers just keep getting tough opponents. And I mean, they pushed the Chiefs in the overtime. They sadly lost the coin toss. It's just been an hectic year for Baker. But honestly, he is probably quarterback of the year if you're talking about someone who is taking a team, which not a lot was expected out of them, and is just performing at a high level. Jane Daniels, still at number three, rookie of the year right now. No shockers from last week. Josh Allen at four, Joe Burrow at five. No shockers there. Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, super consistent. Jalen Hurts worked his way up to six now. He has been balling out for the Eagles. Last game, 29.9 fantasy points. He has 177 on the year. He's also my 16-man league quarterback. I love you, Jalen Hurts. And number seven, Geno Smith. Dude is literally number seven, all right? His number's number seven. He puts up the same amount of stats every single week. Averages 16 fantasy points. But yeah, he's at number seven. He is consistent. He is very consistent. Last week had 22 fantasy points. Geno Smith, no real issue with him being here. And number eight, Bo Nix. That's right. Bo Nix, who started off very shaky with the Broncos, is now the number eight fantasy QB. Had 17 points last week, has 150 on the year. I think the one thing with Bo Nix is that he is only as good as the team around him. And they have an amazing defense, but they also have a tough schedule. Okay, and Bo, he's still young. He's throwing picks every game, but he's using his legs. He's getting in the end zone when he can. It's tough to know if we should start him or not start him. I mean, there's some weeks he's dropping 29 fantasy points. Other weeks he's dropping 8. So tough stuff there, but good job for Bo. Didn't really expect him here this season. Kyler Murray at 9. He's been fluctuating between that 6-9 range. This is his comeback season. Cardinals, tough games all around. They're very middle-of-the-pack team, but they do lead the NFC West right now. Good stuff from Kyler. Brock Purdy, despite being on a bye, still remains in the top 10. He is the number 10 fantasy QB. Consistent stats for him. I mean, very respectable, and he has all the weapons to get it done. Some shockers, I'd say, who aren't in the top 10. Patrick Mahomes is the number 17 fantasy QB. CJ Stroud at 16. A lot was expected of them. Dak Prescott is injured, and Jordan Love has suffered some injuries, but they are the 19 and 20 QBs, which is very unfortunate. And I think Justin Fields would be a top 10 fantasy QB had he not been injured all the time. Anthony Richardson, the 29th fantasy QB, one of the bigger disappointments for the year. But I'd say out of the top 10, biggest shocker, Baker Mayfield at 2, if we were talking preseason projections. But as of just where we're at right now, 10 weeks in about, Bo Nix, shocking. Running back position, Derrick Henry, still the number one fantasy running back. 201 points on the year. He averages 22, and he got 26 last week. He's just been such an asset to this Ravens team. Ravens are scary. Lamar and Derrick Henry, crazy duo. Kamara at number 2, probably the only good player on the Saints, probably the only one that consistently puts up great numbers, put up 27.5 last week as they suffered a loss to the Panthers. I mean, Alvin Kamara is not the issue, but I think if the issues with the Saints team continue, he may be requesting a trade sooner rather than later. At number 3, Saquon Barkley. If you got Derrick Henry and Lamar as the dynamic duo, you got Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley. Saquon has completely revitalized his career, gotten back his mojo, his aura, if you could say, since moving to Philly. Love what I've seen from him. And number 4, finally, Bijan Robinson. He was bottom of the pack, barely even in the top 10 throughout the beginning of the season. He has finally found his footing. Him and Kirk are on the same page. And Bijan Robinson, who's going as the number 3 or number 2 running back in most leagues when people were drafting, is now at the number 4 spot. And number 5, Jahmyr Gibbs. Jahmyr Gibbs has been on an absolute tear. 18 points he's averaging all year, and it's tough. It's tough when you share a backfield with Dave Montgomery, when you get the same amount of touches. And this Lions offense is super crafty. No one's really a stud. No one really stands out. Like, you know, you got Alvin Kamara. He's the standout on the Saints. You got, I don't even know about Bijan, but for example, Devin Achane, he's been a standout. We're going to mention him in a second. On the Dolphins, with the Lions, they use everyone super well. You know, they use Goff. They use Laporta. They use Gibbs. They use Montgomery. They use Amon-Ra. They use every single person, so you never really know who you can focus on. So the fact he's at number 5, super impressive. Kyron Williams at 6, had a down week last week with 10 fantasy points. Rams just suffered, just weren't really vibing. Breece Hall at 7, it's tough. It is super tough on that Jets team to have success, but he's still managing to average 15 fantasy points. And number 8, Devin Achane. Look, the freaking Dolphins are so bad this year. But it's just insane to see how good Devin Achane is. Had 32 fantasy points last week. He is in his sophomore season. The Texas A&M alumni is just balling out. And number 9, Chuba Hubbard. Like we were saying, standouts on teams. He's one of the only benefits about that Panthers team. He's been doing great. And at number 10, James Cook. Kenneth Walker fluctuating in and out as well at number 11. Josh Jacobs at 12, still trying to get into the top 10. And J.K. Dobbins at 13, Joe Mixon at 14. They're climbing the ranks closely. And I mean, there's a lot of stud running backs this season. Aaron Jones, DeAndre Swift, James Conner even. But top 10 belongs to all those people we talked about. Wide receiver fluctuating every single week. Currently number 1, Jamar Chase, but tough on his heels. And number 2, Justin Jefferson. No real shocker, guys. We know these two are some of the best in the league. And number 3, Garrett Wilson. He had 30 fantasy points last season. Him and Aaron Rodgers have been on connection all season. No shocker there. And number 4, CeeDee Lamb. You know, he did suffer an injury. Dak Prescott is going out, so expect CeeDee Lamb to dip a bit. But at number 4, no shocker. Drake London at 5, he was questionable. Okay, he was questionable, I believe. He might not be playing this week, but he's been number 5 so far, has 141 points on the year. It's been an exceptional performance for him. His career's completely turned around since getting Kirk Cousins. Injuries have just hurt him. And number 6, Chris Godwin. The fact he's still in the top 10 is insane. Okay, he's at 6 right now. He's probably going to drop after this week, but such a shame. Season-ending injury, but career-impacting injury to Chris Godwin. And the fact that Chris Godwin gets injured in Week 7 was just terrible. I mean, his stat line, 22, 24, 17, 12, 11, 35 in Week 6. Such a shame he gets injured. Chris Godwin, I wish you a speedy recovery. And number 7, Terry McLaurin. Terry McLaurin, I mean, when you go from Sam Howell, when you go from Jacoby Brissett to all of a sudden you're catching passes from Jaden Daniels, who is one of the best rookie quarterbacks you've seen in the past decade, I mean, you're going to be getting fantasy points. He's averaging 15, 136 total on the year. He's been balling. At number eight, Amon-Ra. Okay, Amon-Ra St. Brown should realistically be a top five, top four, maybe even top three wide receiver. It's just this Lions team, they're so crafty. It's so hard to get a lot of fantasy points. Managed to get 18 last week. He's been a stud. At number nine, Zay Flowers jumping into the top 10. 29 fantasy points last week. We knew he was Lamar Jackson's number one option through the air. He's finally finding his footing, and he's been a fantasy monster. At number 10, Jaden Reed trying to stand out on this Packers team is tough, okay? You have Dontayvion Wicks. You have Romeo Doubs. You have Christian Watson when he's healthy. And it's really tough, but Jaden Reed has managed to remain in the top 10 since week one. So he has to have a big week 10 if he wants to remain in the top 10. Brian Thomas Jr., hot on the heels of the top 10. Darnell Mooney as well. Two Falcons wide receivers, that's crazy. Malik Nabers has been taking kind of a dip. And Jackson Smith and Jigba, had he not been having a bye this week, definitely would have jumped into the top 10. Absolutely love them. Flex positions, because we can't really get tight ends, but here are your top 10 tight ends. Number one, Brock Bowers, rookie tight end of the year. He's exceptional. I love him. And number two, George Kittle. The only reason Brock Bowers passed him is because Kittle had a bye. They fluctuate. It's pretty much been the Kittle and Bowers show. And number three, Cade Otton for the Buccaneers has completely climbed the ranks. He is on a current double-digit streak of three straight weeks, 18, 29, and 21 in terms of fantasy points. Baker Mayfield has been loving him. Low Cade Otton. And number four, Trey McBride, no shocker. He was expected to be a top three, top two, maybe even the best tight end of the upcoming season, and Kyler Murray knows how to use him. And number five, Travis Kelce has finally found his footing, finally getting passes, finally getting touchdowns. Had 22 last week. Gosh, I hate Travis Kelce. And number six, Tucker Kraft with the Packers. Yet another option through the air, as I was mentioning all those options. Jordan Love also loves himself a little Tucker Kraft. And number seven, Kyle Pitts did get injured, unfortunately. And with this Falcons team, they're very similar to the Packers in terms of they have so many excellent wide receivers. You got Drake London, you got Darnell Mooney, you got Ray McLeod, Kyle Pitts especially too. It's tough to stand out. But at number seven, not too bad. Hunter Henry at eight, just is what I would expect with that Patriots team. No shocker there. Cole Kmet at nine. I love it. We talk about Cole Kmet all the time. Week six, 24 fantasy points. Week three, 25 fantasy points. Other than that, he's been putting up duds. He didn't even have a target last game. He didn't even have a, not going to cuss, didn't even have a target last game. And at number 10, Dalton Kincaid. I love Dalton Kincaid, the new stud tight end on the Bills. He's been doing great. Mark Andrews at 11, close approaching the top 10. And number 12, Zach Ertz dropping out of the top 10 from last week. And Mike Gesicki of the Bengals, talk about balling out compared to his Dolphins days. He is approaching the top 10. Tight ends, love them or hate them, they are there. Defensive-wise, no real shockers here. Okay, Vikings defense back at number one. Love them. Broncos defense had a rough week. Okay, Broncos had a rough week. Getting blown out by the Ravens, but still an exceptional defense. Steelers at three. We're on a bye week. I expect them to climb back up to the number one position. Packers at four. I'd say a shockingly good defense, if I'm being honest. Chargers at five have been insane. They have given up the least amount of points. All right, it's been just incredible. They've been doing it immaculate, and you can thank Harbaugh for that. And number six, the Bears. They have been dropping off a bit, but still in the top 10. And number seven, the 49ers. We already knew they had a good defense. Number eight, the Texans. This Texans team should be way better than the record shows. Don't really know what's going on there. Lions at nine. Lions defense has been very stout the last few weeks. After giving up 27 points in week four, they get the bye week and have just been clicking ever since. And at number 10, to round off, you got the Bills. Okay, you got the Bills down there. Jets defense, Giants defense, Browns defense, all on the heels of everyone. But how about the Panthers defense, who through 10 weeks, or 9 weeks, I should say, have only managed to get negative 5 points. That is right. If you started the Panthers every single week, you would have negative 5 points. The Panthers have, in fact, only gone positive for 3 weeks of the entire season so far. That is insane, if you ask me. Defenses, clearly only the Vikings defense is the only asset one. They've gotten 90 points. But this year, it's been the kickers. Kickers have overtaken defenses for top positions. Austin Siebert of the Commanders is questionable, oddly. Don't know what's going on with him. Apparently, because of his hip, he didn't practice. But he's been a breakout this year. 104 points on the season. Had 9 last week. He's been a baller. Chris Boswell, at number 2, was on a bye. He had 101 before last week. Chris Boswell, probably your number 1 kicker. Kai Fairbairn of Houston, he's been such an asset. Brandon Aubrey of Dallas, I think, is the best kicker in the league. He, unfortunately, is just on a Dallas team that deprogressed so rapidly from last season, they just can't keep up. Justin Tucker at 5, back where he belongs. Chase McLaughlin of the Buccaneers. Buccaneers get so many opportunities. He's gotten 81 points on the year. Will Lutz tied with 6. He's also got 81 fantasy points from Denver. Denver team fluctuating every week. Young Hoku has dropped down to number 8. Tyler Bass moves up to number 8 for the Falcons and Buffalo Bills, respectively. And at number 10, Blake Grupp of New Orleans had 12 fantasy points last week. He was doing an exceptional job. Other than that, I mean, you got some decent guys. Will Reichard is going to IR for us, so the Vikings have to pick up another kicker. It's been a hectic season so far. But, I mean, fun stuff all around in terms of whatever you want to call it, fantasy football. I'm in so many leagues. One league, I'm 2-6. Another 2-7. Another league, I'm 3-6. Another league, I'm 6-3, 5-4. I think I'm 6-3 in another league. You know, I'm never doing 5 fantasy football leagues again. It is way too much to manage. I'm also in fantasy basketball, which I never check. Fantasy hockey, which I occasionally set my roster. Fantasy football is taking over the world. Fantasy in general, I should better say. And I'll tell you what else is going to be taking over all of our TV screens this upcoming weekend, and that is going to be some Week 10 NFL football. And this is our week, guys. Okay, this is our week. This is where I come in and I nail all of my predictions. That is what is going to happen. I'm here for it. I'm game. I feel like it is my time. It is week 10. It is about time I win a Pick'ems week. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of losing over and over and over again. And it starts here. Thursday night football. We get the Bengals and the Ravens. How about a little AFC North battle? Ravens 6-3. They're coming off of a win. They are 3-1 at home. Bengals 3-1 on the road. They are currently 3rd in the AFC North with a 4-5 record. Bengals are going to be your underdogs at +215. Ravens a -260 favorite. You already know I'm riding with the Ravens. And here's what I'm thinking about fantasy-wise is that I may have Mike Gesicki, but I also have Zay Flowers, all right? And I want to root for Zay Flowers over Mike Gesicki. Ravens, they've also been playing exceptional this season. They were able to beat the Bengals earlier when they played in an absolute barn burner. I expect this to be high scoring. I expect this to be action-packed. And I expect the Ravens to get this one done. Ravens have an exceptional point differential, +74. Oh my gosh, that's actually insane. Actually, I think it's 64. Bengals, they are only +9. You know, their defenses, they both give up a lot of points. But their offenses make up for it. We're going with the Ravens. Following that, we get right on into NFL Sunday, and I don't know where we're at. I don't think we're in London. We might be in Germany, Mexico. I don't know where we're at, but we're somewhere foreign, and the Giants are taking on the Panthers. Panthers are technically home, but they're not home. Giants -290, Panthers +240. Shockingly, the Panthers won last week. Shockingly, the Panthers got their second win of the season over the Saints. Don't let that misconstrue you from the fact their offense has only put up 147 points. Their defense has given up 293 points. No other defense in the NFC has come even that close, and no one in the AFC is even that close. The worst defense in the league is the Panthers. As for the Giants, not too much better. They are last in the NFC East, 4-game losing streak, 2-7, but both of their wins have came on the road, and this is very on the road for a Giants team that's coming off of a sort of some momentum. They took the Commanders down to a 5-point game. They brought them to the wire. I don't really have anyone to root for. Maybe Chuba Hubbard, but I am going to be backing the Giants in this one. I just think the Giants have only won on the road so far, and they're not even in the country, I don't think. So, great opportunity for the Giants. Daniel Jones, Malik Nabers, pop off. After that, Patriots visit the Bears. We're finally in our 12 o'clock games. Pats are +240. Bears are -290. Bears have had a tough schedule, man. Bears have been playing some tough teams. They're 4-4, 0-4 on the road, 4-0 at home, 2-game losing streak. It's about time they get a win at home. So we are definitely picking the Bears in this one. Plus Drake May, struggling. Pats suffered a tough loss. They only have 141 points on the year, one of the worst offenses in the league. And you're taking on a Bears defense. They're number six right now. They used to be one. They fluctuate in the 1-5 range. This Bears defense is going to eat the Patriots for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Give me the Bears over the Patriots. Moving along, Buffalo Bills visit the Indianapolis Colts in an AFC showdown. Bills, 7-2, four-game win streak, 260 points for, only 173 points against, minus 210 favorites. They take on a Colts team which just lost to the Minnesota Vikings. Colts here, they find themselves tied, or not tied, they're actually second in the AFC South with a 4-5 record. Colts have gone 3-1 at home, which is good for them, but they're on a two-game losing streak. Joe Flacco and Anthony Richardson, they can never really decide who should be playing. I think this Bills team is super talented. I think if the Colts are going to win this, it is going to be done in a shootout where they just capitalize on a Bills defense that's playing to the level of their opponents. I just have to go with the Bills in this one. I can't pick against this Bills team. You know, I got Josh Allen in a league, and I really don't have any. I think I have Josh Downs in a couple of leagues, but Bills, they just appear to be more well-rounded. And when James Cook isn't hot, you got Ray Davis going off. So random. Give me the Bills. After that, Broncos and Chiefs. Let's keep it short and sweet. Yeah, we're picking the Chiefs. If they're going to lose, okay, if they're going to lose, it's going to be to the Broncos. It's going to be to the Broncos, but we're just not picking against them. I'm picking the Chiefs every single week. Statistically, my odds of predicting the Chiefs to win are better than their projections to lose. They've only given up 147 points on the year, undefeated. The reigning Super Bowl champs are undefeated. I thought they were supposed to get worse. They've lost Isaiah Pacheco. They've lost Rashee Rice. And they've had DeAndre Hopkins. Okay, they've just been balling out. It's been insane. Kareem Hunt back in the mix. As for the Broncos, 5-4. Rookie QB and Bo Nix. They just aren't going to get it done. Give me the Chiefs over the Broncos, which pains me to say. Ooh, a little divisional matchup in the NFC South as the Falcons visit the Saints. Honestly, it's these divisional games where you usually see the Saints win something like this. Falcons are on a two-game winning streak, are undefeated, 3-0 on the road. Their offense is clicking. Drake London may be out, though. Same with Kyle Pitts, both questionable as of right now. But with Bijan in the mix, you're not going to be stopping him. Alvin Kamara is the only good thing about this Saints team. No Olave. I do hope Taysom Hill pops off, but I don't have much hope. Give me the Falcons over the Saints for this one. And the Falcons, by the way, minus 190. Saints at plus 160. Those odds are a lot closer than I would have thought. Saints, oh gosh, nothing good to say about them. Nothing good to say about them. But, you know, I can't lie. If they're going to win a game, it's going to be this one. They played them to 2 points in September when the Falcons won 26-24. Best of luck to both of these teams, but we're probably going with Kirko Chains and the Falcons. Actually, that's who we are officially going with. 49ers visit the Buccaneers coming off of their bye week in a little NFC matchup. 49ers are somehow third in the NFC West. I mean, everyone but the Cardinals has 4 wins, so 49ers are coming off a win. They've been decent on the road, 1-2. I mean, that's just mediocre. Buccaneers at home, they are 2-3. They are on a 3-game losing streak, though. And when you're playing tough teams like the 49ers with a potential healthy Christian McCaffrey with the minus 300 favorite, give me the 49ers over the Buccaneers. It's nothing against Baker, but I do think this Buccaneers team is going to be a team where it's like they are playing such good football every single week, but they keep losing close games. And we're going to look at that in a year, and Baker Mayfield is going to finish as a top 3 fantasy QB, and just nothing else was really clicking. He's lost Mike Evans. He's officially lost Chris Godwin. They're just running out of options. Steelers back off their bye week, get a tough road matchup with the Commanders. Commanders, one of the shockingly good teams this season. Commanders are 7-2, 4-0 at home, 263 points put up. They are one of the best offenses in the league. They've been balling out there, the minus 145 favorites, as they take on the leaders of the AFC North, the 6-2. Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh is plus 125. You got Russ under the helm. But I think as good as this Commanders defense may have been from last season, I think the Steelers defense is better. And I think this Commanders team, which has been doing exceptional, is going to run into a Steelers defense that is just too supreme for them. And while I don't necessarily think that the Steelers are going to be running away with anything, you know, they just added Mike Williams. That's not going to change much. George Pickens' targets might go down. I just feel that the Steelers are a better team than the Commanders, and the Steelers are probably going to finish as 500, but I think a shocking road win here is what's in the cards for the Commanders, as the Steelers will beat them on home soil. After that, Vikings take on the Jags to round out our noon games. And, I mean, this should be no shocker. I mean, even if I wasn't a Vikings fan, I'm picking the Minnesota Vikings to win this. Vikings 6-2. All right, we've been playing some exceptional football. Taking on the 2-7 Jags, it's a no-brainer. We're -210 favorite here. And Vikings, you know, it's been an interesting season. Both of our losses, tough losses, lost on a game-winning field goal to the second-best team in the league, the Lions. And as for that Rams game, they missed a call. All right, obviously, we didn't play our best football, but they missed a call. We should never have lost that game like that. Jaguars, it has been just bad. You know, you've had some good. You've had Tank Bigsby. You've had Brian Thomas Jr. T-Law had a great game. But overall, 2-7, they are just awful. They are 0-5 on the road, so they will get a very helpful home game here. Now, mind you, one of those home games technically was a London win, which is basically home for them. But Vikings over the Jags. I will be rooting for Justin Jefferson. I will be rooting for Jordan Addison, Aaron Jones, but I'll also be rooting for Tank Bigsby and Brian Thomas Jr. So kind of a mix. Even Evan Engram, I'll be rooting for him too. But we are a Vikings fan, ride or die. Titans visit the Chargers to kick off our 3 o'clock slate in the AFC. Titans are 2-6, only coming off a win. They beat the Patriots last week. Shockingly, Tony Pollard is questionable, you know, and Mason Rudolph can only do so much. Tony Pollard has been an excellent asset. And this Chargers team, 5-3, they're a -380 favorite. Like I said, one of the best defenses in the league. They are the best, actually. 101 points given up. That's insane. Okay, that's insane. Titans offense that doesn't score that much. Give me the Chargers all day. Give me the Chargers all day. This is a no-brainer. I'll be rooting for J.K. Dobbins. Heck, I'll even be rooting for Ladd McConkey and Josh Palmer. I don't even have them in fantasy. I just like them as human beings. Following that, America's Game of the Week. I'm assuming this has got to be America's Game of the Week as the Eagles visit the Cowboys. I mean, it's got to be. It's always America's Game of the Week. Eagles, Cowboys, NFC East matchup. I'll be curious to see what happens. Eagles are second in the NFC East, 6-2 record, 199 points put up this season. They're 3-1 on home and at the road, so it doesn't really matter where they're at. 4-game winning streak, they have so much momentum. Cowboys, on the other hand, at home, 0-3. 3-game losing streak, 3-5 record, +280. And I mean, Dak Prescott just went out. It's looking bleak. It's looking bleak. I'm obviously going with the Eagles. You know, I'm a Saquon Barkley, Devontae Smith, Jalen Hurts fan. As much as I have CeeDee Lamb and Rico Dowdle in some leagues, that's not going to overshadow my appreciation for the players on the Eagles. Eagles over the Cowboys, it's honestly a no-brainer for me. But like I said, it's these divisional games where you see upsets. Look at the Panthers and Saints. That's where you see upsets. It's not going to be the next game. Okay, next game, Jets and Cardinals. Whoever wins that, it's not an upset. Whoever wins this isn't an upset. Now, Cardinals, 5-4, are the top team in the NFC West. 3-game winning streak for this Cardinals team, which started 2-4. At home, a -105 favorite. Now, unfortunately, they actually have the same odds as another favorite, which is the New York Jets. They are -115, and this should be very, very telling of them. They are 1-4 on the road. Aaron Rodgers has struggled with this team on the road. 3-6 record. They picked up a big win last week. A much-needed win against the Texans on Thursday Night Football for the Jets. So they'll get a much-needed rest until 3:25 on Sunday. This one's tricky for me. This one's very tricky. You know, this Jets team just gave away Mike Williams, which wasn't really doing anything. Devontae Adams and, oh my gosh, Garrett Wilson have both been incredible assets. Don't even forget about Lazard, for goodness sakes. Breece Hall, killer in the backfield. Even Bray and Allen has been amazing. This Cardinals team, just sneaky good, very sneaky good. You got Trey McBride, you got James Conner, Kyler Murray. Defense had a great game last week against the Bears, but I am going to go with the New York Jets. It's just, I don't know. I think this Jets team is going to have a revitalization. I think, you know, you pick up a big win against the Texans. You're coming in against the Cardinals team that has some momentum, and I think you suck that momentum out of Arizona. Give me the Cardinals. Give me the Cardinals to lose. I'm going Jets over Cardinals. Is that a shocking pick? I don't know, but we got to make the picks to shock people. Not really. I need to win pick-ems. Moving into Sunday Night Football, actually a great game. Lions, Texans, both teams respectively leading their divisions. Texans, you know, no Stephon Diggs anymore. Nico Collins will be coming back, though. 6-3 record. They are +160 at home. Texans have gone 4-0 at home. All three of their losses have came on the road. Tough loss to a Jets team last week. They are 201 and 200 in terms of points for and points against, so a +1 point differential. Does, I guess, benefit the Texans if you think about it like that. But they're taking on a team here, the Lions. And I mean, minus 190, they are 7-1, 4-0 on the road, 6-game win streak. It's a no-brainer. The Lions are like the, how do I want to put it, the Chiefs. Statistically, you want to pick the Lions every week compared to not picking against them. And this is just not a game I see them losing. They have a plus 110-point differential. Okay, they've only given up 148 points. They've scored 258 points. Jared Goff and Amon-Ra St. Brown on a completely different level than anyone else. Sam Laporta, an asset when people forget about him. David Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs, a crazy backfield. The defense has been doing incredible. Lions over the Texans. They're going to hand them the first loss at home. We head to Monday Night Football. My worst nightmare is true as the Rams will be hosting the Dolphins, and I play against Cooper Kupp and against Kyren Williams on Monday Night Football. Very, very sad. Dolphins plus 100, Rams minus 120. A very shockingly bad season for the Dolphins here. Dolphins find themselves third in the AFC East. One of the worst teams in the league, 2-6, 3-game losing streak. They're the worst offense. They've only put up 124 points. And that'll happen when your star QB gets a concussion and really shouldn't be playing anymore. But I mean, nonetheless, no excuses. Chane's been a beast. Tyreek Hill just can't get those historic numbers that he used to. And Jaylen Waddle just is not getting the touches that he was last season. As for the Rams, they've been kind of finding their mojo. 3-game win streak, 4-4. They are 3-1 at home, 1-3 on the road, so this does benefit them. I think you got to give this one to the Rams. Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua, Kyren Williams, they're going to eat on Monday Night Football. And don't forget about DeMarcus Robinson. Okay, there's just so many options. This Dolphins team, if they're going to pull off an upset, I don't think it's this game. I don't see them winning. Give me the Rams over the Dolphins. How about I have no idea what it's going to be, but Rams over the Dolphins, no-brainer for me. Actually, I wouldn't say a no-brainer, but should be competitive. Those are your NFL Week 10 quick picks. Let's get back to it, folks. Okay, let's get back to it. Let's get back to when I could actually predict matchups correctly, and I can win pick'ems, and I'll post to my shirt that says, I know NFL pick'ems. On the year, actually, what am I on the year? On the year, Zachary Ruger in pick'ems. This is unofficial, as I may have missed some. I guess this is official. 83-54. I guess that isn't that bad. But I'm second place in my family, third place in my thing with my two friends, and 25th for the Mavericks, which I guess isn't too bad. How many people are in this Mavericks one? 56, so I'm in the upper echelon there, but the top guy has 99 correct picks. Shout out to Mark Wind Picks. My goodness, he had 11 in week 9. We only had 9 in week 9. We'll be back, boys. Trust me. With that, let's get into our top 10 new things in pop culture. I think the one major thing in pop culture is, hey, Donald Trump is your new president. How about that? Number one, Donald Trump is your new president. The star, he had a cameo in Home Alone. He had a cameo in Zoolander. You know, fun fact, that's your pop culture. Number one. Number two, AMC CEO Adam Aaron says that he has heard that Moana 2 could be an even bigger success than Inside Out 2. Inside Out 2 is currently the highest grossing animated film ever. I found that very fascinating because I think AMC is more of a dying breed. I am much more of an Imagine Theaters type of guy when I go to the movies. And Inside Out 2 had so much success, I will never watch it. It's just not my cup of tea. Same for Moana. So if you target those young parents, if you target the young children, that's who's going to go see this. But it's going to be hard to replicate. And I know they always like to try and replicate things back to back. But look at how the distance between Avengers Endgame and between Avatar. Okay, there was a decade difference there. I don't know if we're going to see a year difference between the Inside Out 2 success and the Moana 2 success, but we'll have to see. And number three, GTA 6 is still on track to release in fall 2025. Take-Two confirmed it is in their quarterly report release today. I really hope so. And fall, in my mind, lasts from the last day of November until, I should say, it lasts from the first day of September until the last day of November. I consider September, October, November to be fall. I know it kind of dips into, I believe it is December a bit, but it's those three-month window. So unofficially, we are basically a year away. We don't have an exact date, though, and I don't exactly know any details about it. But I will be a 23-year-old human being playing a video game because I am dying to play GTA 6. Hopefully I'm still alive for it. Well, then we'll see if God keeps me around. And if he does, I'll use a couple of my spare hours to check out GTA 6. And number four, first look at Grendel in the Grendel movie, which will tell his side of the story about his rivalry with Beowulf. It stars Jeff Bridges as Grendel, Dave Bautista as Beowulf, and Bryan Cranston as King Hrothgar. I'm telling you all, the picture I'm looking at right now is of a werewolf, I believe. This comes from The Hollywood Reporter. I don't know what this movie's about. I think it has to do with werewolves and random junk. That is super, super freaky. Number five, Warner Bros. Will be submitting Dune 2 for the best original score at the Oscars, despite it not meeting eligibility requirements. Dennis Villeneuve said, I don't think this is over yet. I mean, Dune 2 should win everything. Dune 2, one of the best movies I've ever seen. I haven't wanted to rewatch it just because I want to treasure my first watching experience that much. I was so hesitant to see it. I actually listened to all the critics. I listened to the TikTok nerds, and it truly was one of the best movies I've ever watched in a theater and in general. So I hope it does win best score. Number six, from season one to season five of Stranger Things, the final season releases next year on Netflix. First look at season five, the final season of Stranger Things. All I'm going to say, guys, is I don't know what age these kids were in the first season, but they look like adults compared to where they did right now. I'm so excited for the final season. I assume it's going to be, 10 episodes? Hopefully 10 episodes, hopefully split into two different spots. I mean, it's going to be great. Season four was amazing. Okay, season three was amazing. Season two was okay. Season one, of course, is what got everyone hooked. But season five, it's how you end it all out with a big bang, and hopefully it gets a big boom. There you go. Number seven, Ralph Macchio will get a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame later this month. Well, it's clear that Ralph Macchio has been to the Diddy parties if he's on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. A little nervous about that, but the Cobra Kai star is one of my favorite actors when it comes to the Cobra Kai universe. I'll be excited to watch the final season when it drops. Cobra Kai has finally reached its end, but as for Ralph Macchio, getting your Hollywood Walk of Star, good for him. Here's one for you. Number eight, oh my gosh, first look. As Jack Black, as Satan Santa in the Farrelly Brothers' new film, Dear Satan. The film follows a young boy who, in writing this letter to Santa, mixes up the letters and sends it to Satan instead. I can't tell you how much that disgusts me, how much I despise Satan, how much I despise Black Jack for this. Black Jack has completely taken a whirlwind. What happened to the lovable guy from the Jumanji movies, from School of Rock? Now he's starring as Satan? Oh my gosh, Jack Black, go worship Kamala somewhere and take this L, you Democrat. Number nine, the final season of Stranger Things will be set just over 1 year after the events of season four. It releases in 2025 on Netflix. Guys, if no one saw the end of season four, spoiler alert, wasn't all of Hawkins about to get attacked by some like fire world? Like, didn't a volcano? I don't even know what happened. How are we going to do a year skip? Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to get a full rewatch of all of Stranger Things before the final season comes out, but I don't know, pretty crazy. Episode titles for the final season of Stranger Things have been revealed. There's currently 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 of them. Okay, so these are the titles. The Crawl, The Vanishing of Redacted, which is just they haven't said it, The Turnbow Trap, Sorcerer, Shock Jock, Escape from Kamazots, The Bridge, and The Right Side Up. Oh my goodness, I am very intrigued. I am very intrigued. I'm judging by these, The Crawl is going to have to do with some tense scenes of crawling somewhere. The Vanishing of Blank will be one of the characters who vanishes, or potentially a new introduced character. The Turnbow Trap will probably be about them getting caught in a trap of some kind. The Turnbow will probably be a spot or a place, or maybe they're trying to trap something. Sorcerer, probably deal with one of the people with powers. Shock Jock, I assume it's going to be one of the jocks and maybe get shocked or something. As cringy as that sounds, you'd be surprised. Escape from Kamazots. Kamazots is definitely a place, maybe in the Upside Down. The Bridge, I don't know. Definitely involves the bridge. And the finale, The Right Side Up, makes me kind of think and kind of hope. And honestly, we can all assume they're going to end this on a positive note. The Upside Down, where all the bad things happen. The Right Side Up is where we're going to end up. I'm excited for it. Stranger Things is kicking into gear. I'm here for it. And there's some nerds out there. I mean, holy cow. Let me just say, I'm a UFC nerd. I would much rather be a UFC nerd than a Stranger Things nerd. I mean, do you see the stuff they post on TikTok? It is absolutely ridiculous. How about you just watch a show? Just watch a show and just enjoy it. You don't have to go dressing up as the characters. You don't have to go getting all groovy, baby. You don't have to get shagadelic. Okay, I can't judge when it comes to dressing up. I dressed up as Austin Powers for Halloween. But these people, I mean, come on, they talk and act like what is it, like Eddie Bauer's, what's his name, Eddie Brock something? I can't remember. I won't judge people too much. If you have a passion, I encourage you to follow it. If something makes you happy, how about you go and do it? Those are the top 10 new things in pop culture. And with that, we get into the final bit, the cream of the crop of today's episode, as we get into our UFC Vegas 100 predictions. Yes, this is the 100th UFC Apex event. Gosh, I remember when I was just a young lad, 2020, watching my first Apex event. Little did I know, 4 freaking years later, we'd still be getting these. But nonetheless, got some fun fights, got some fights to predict. Let's get right into it. Kicking off this Saturday night's card, we don't really know what's going to be going on. This card keeps undergoing changes. The bout order is going to be switching here and there, but what I do know is that we are going to be nailing our predictions, guys. 2 straight weeks, 10-3 on predictions. We're 277 correct, 173 incorrect on the year, plus 104. Are you kidding me? I need to start betting. Why don't I bet? I would be a millionaire had I bet. But according to my current slate of notes and the current UFC schedule, we will be kicking off the night with a women's bantamweight matchup between Melissa No Mess Mullins and Claudia Segula. Melissa 6-1. Claudia also 6-1. Claudia doesn't even have any of her stats uploaded to UFCstats.com. I just realized Melissa is 5'7", 68-inch reach. Don't really know anything about Claudia. What are you doing, UFC Stats? Come on, you're a global company. I want to work for you. You know, when I work for the UFC, when I do work for the UFC and I run UFC Stats and I do the UFC rankings, I will make sure they're always up to date. Mullins, -260 favorite. Claudia, a +195 underdog. We'll start with Melissa Mullins because Claudia is making her debut in this one. Melissa, 33 years old, from England. Of her 6 wins, she has 3 KOs. Her one loss was by knockout in her last fight. She was actually supposed to fight Montserrat Rendon, but Rendon pulled out of this fight a week or two ago. Melissa was undefeated 6-0 after winning her UFC debut in October of 2023, but in April she took on Nora Cornell and got knocked out with a knee in round number 2. So Melissa coming into this one off a loss, she'll look to regain momentum against the debuting Claudia Segula. Claudia, 25 years young, from Poland. Of her 6 wins, she has 2 KOs and 1 submission. Her one loss is by sub. Currently on a 6-fight winning streak, dropped her first professional fight, and since then has looked outstanding. Makes her debut here, and you know this is a toss-up, 33-25. Did Mullins do anything spectacular in that fight? No. And she's been dropped in both of her UFC events fights so far. I'm going to give this one to Claudia Segula. I also looked at the pictures of them both. I find Claudia much better to look at than Melissa Mullins. No offense, Melissa. So we are going to give this one to the young gun, Claudia Segula. And she's only 3 years older than me, so it's super cool. Fighting in the UFC, you'll love to see it. I'm going to say, gosh, I mean, do we think she gets finished again? I don't know. I'm going to say decision. This just screams decision. Let's not even get spicy. Claudia over Melissa by decision. After that, middleweight action as Trayshawn Mr. Vicious Gore takes on Antonio Malvado Tricoli. Trayshawn Gore, the -180 favorite, is 5-2 professionally. The +145 underdog, Antonio, is 12-4 with 1 no contest. 6'5 to 6 foot give Tricoli, 5-inch height advantage. He also has a 5-inch reach advantage, 80 inches to 75. Switch stance for Gore, orthodox for Antonio Tricoli. Let's start with Trayshawn Gore, one of the runner-ups of the Ultimate Fighter back in, 2022, when that took place. That was freaking crazy. Trayshawn, 30 years old, from South Carolina. Of his 5 professional wins, he has 1 KO and 2 submissions. Of his 2 losses, he has been knocked out once, which is actually by Cody Brundage in July of 2022. He hasn't fought since October 2022 when he submitted Josh Fremd with a nasty guillotine choke. He's just been out of luck. Had a fight booked against Bo Nickel in 2023, pulled out of that. Had a fight booked against AJ Dobson in February, pulled out of that. So now finally finds himself with a fight, hasn't fought in 2 years. He takes on Antonio Tricoli. Antonio, 33 years old, the underdog, is from Brazil. Of his 12 wins, he has 3 KOs and 5 subs, so 8 of 12 wins by finish. Not too bad. Half of his losses are by TKO. He's actually had 3 canceled bouts. knockouts in the UFC before he made his debut against Sharamagomedov in June. He did nothing in that fight. Stood still, very boring stance. Shara picked him apart, finally hit him with some combos, and the ref was like, what's going on here? Stops the fight. Antonio fought on Dana White's Contender Series in 2019, got a neck crank, but it was actually overturned to a no contest for some reason. Look, this is actually great matchmaking. Antonio, don't know much about him. Didn't see much in the Sharamagomedov fight. Trayshawn Gore hasn't fought in 2 years. I was pretty high on Trayshawn Gore before he left. I'm going to stay high on him as Trocoli just hasn't given me much to work with. He's very tall. He's very lanky. I think Trayshawn Gore gets a takedown, submits him in round one or two. Give me Trayshawn Gore to win this matchup. Following that, we head to the men's bantamweight division as Cody the Spartan Stamman, one of my favorite nicknames, takes on Damon the Monster Blackshear. He should have done Damon Bear Blackshear, something like that, like Grizzly Bear Blackshear. Cody, 21-7-1. This will be his 30th professional fight. Damon Blackshear, 14-7-1. This will be his 23rd professional fight. 5'10 to 5'6 gives Damon 4 inches in height, and he has a notable 8 inches in reach. Holy cow, 72 to 64. He fights switch stance orthodox for Cody Stamman. Cody, plus 190 underdog. Damon, the minus 250. Favorite. Cody, the underdog, 34 years old from Sparta, Michigan. Fun enough. Of his 21 wins, he has 9 finishes, 7 KOs and 2 subs. Of his 7 losses, he's been submitted twice. Cody Stamman kind of had an interesting run in the UFC as of so far. Comes in, you know, he's a young buck. He only has 1 loss, you know, starts his UFC career off on 3-0, then takes on Aljamain Sterling, gets finished with a sub-lof stretch. Second time it ever happened in UFC history, getting finished with a sub-lof stretch. After that, decision, gets to a draw against Song Yedong, beats Brian Keller in 2020. After that, has to take on Jimmy Rivera, has to take on Merab Dvoshevli, has to take on Sayed Nurmagomedov. Finally, June of 2022, gets his first UFC finish with a 59-second TKO of Eddie Wineland. Follows that up in January of 2023 with a unanimous decision win over Leon Lacerda. Then, May of 2023, drops a decision to Douglas Silva de Andrade. Did not think he lost that fight. And then recently in June, he took on Taylor Lapalooz. And I thought he'd win that fight, but honestly, Taylor just had his number in the striking department and got it done. Cody looking to get back into the win column as he takes on the dangerous Damon Blackshear. Now, Damon has been on a good run. He is the favorite here, 30 years old from North Carolina. Of his 14 wins, 11 finishes, 2 KOs, and 9 subs. Of his 7 losses, he's only been finished once, and that once was actually in his last fight in July when Montel Jackson shockingly knocked him out in 18 seconds. It was shocking. I was taken aback by it. It was actually crazy. It was actually crazy, the fact that he knocked him out in 18 seconds. Besides that, Damon is 2-3 in the UFC with a draw. Took Yusuf Zalal to a draw. And if anyone watched last weekend's card, Yusuf Zalal is an absolute savage. Took Fareed Bashrat to a decision. Finished Luan Lacerda, a man who went the distance with Cody Stamman. He finished him in round two. Hit the third ever twister on Jose Johnson, insane. And then took Mario Bautista to a close decision. I like both these guys. They're both fun fighters, but I got to give this a unanimous decision victory to Damon Blackshear. The reach, the grappling, Cody Stamman is just not someone who comes out looking super hungry for the finish. That Eddie Wineland fight, Eddie Wineland was being knocked out by everyone he was fighting. Damon, I do think, just suffered a fluke loss to Montel Jackson. By the way, Montel Jackson is on a 5-fight win streak, an absolute killer. Let's not hold that against him. Give me the favorite, Damon Blackshear. Following that, we jump up to the men's, what are we at right now, welterweight division. I never know if these guys are welterweights or middleweights, always jumping around weight classes, as Matthew Semi the Jedi Semmelsberger takes on Charles Chuck Buffalo Radke. Oh boy, if anyone knows about these two, this will be interesting. Matthew, 11-7, Charles, 9-4. 6'1 to 5'9 gives Matthew Semmelsberger 3 inches in height, and he also has 3 inches in reach, 75 to 72. Actually, he might have, I think that's 4 inches in reach if I did my math wrong. Switch stance for Matthew, orthodox with that right hand for Charles Chuck Buffalo Radke. Matthew is the underdog at plus 135. Charles, the minus 170 favorite. Let's start with Matthew here. Matthew Semmelsberger, 31 years old from Maryland. Of his 11 wins, 7 finishes, including 6 KOs and 1 sub. Of his 7 losses, he's been KO'd twice and submitted once. Matthew comes in the UFC in 2020, part of that batch of fighters. There's always, if anyone started watching UFC when I did, kind of in that 2019 September range heading into 2020, there's a certain number of fighters who debuted during COVID. And one of them was Matthew Semelsberger. Comes in March 2021, gets a 16-second knockout. We're like, this guy's so good. Goes the distance against Cass Williams, doesn't get dropped. Follows it up with a 15-second knockout of Martin Sinnoh. Becomes the first man to defeat AJ Fletcher. Takes the Alex Morono to a tough decision. Then actually beats Jake Matthews. And then after taking Jeremiah Wells to a split decision in 2023, just hasn't looked the same. Uros Medic knocked him out in July of 2023, and in his lone fight in January of this year, he got outgrappled by Preston Parsons. This will be a big bounce back fight for Matthew as he takes on Charles Chuck Buffalo Radke. 9-4, the minus 170 favorite, is 34 years old from Wisconsin. Of his 9 wins, 6 finishes, 4 KOs and 2 subs. Of his 4 losses, he's been knocked out twice. Charles is currently 2-1 in the UFC. He made his UFC debut against Blood Diamond at UFC 293 in September, and he proceeded to call the crowd the FAG word. That is bad. After that, he would take on Gilbert Urbina in February of this year and knock him out in round number 1. Charles would then proceed to do the exact same thing and say the FAG word on the microphone. I think he might have even said some other harsh words. Then he got his mouth knocked in as Carlos Prates knocked him out with a knee in June of this year. But as we all know, Carlos Prates is an absolute killer and he's in the main event. Charles Radke, I think, is much more game than Matthew Semelsberger. This should be a war. I do think this is going to be a knockout of some kind. I'm going to lean Charles Radke, but keep your eyes on Matthew Semelsberger. But I am going Charles Radke. I do think his abilities are better than Semelsberger, and as of late, he's had better luck. Let's look at the one guy that's beaten Radke so far in the last 2 or 3 years. It's the guy in the main event who's on a 10-fight win streak. So Charles Radke over Matthew Semelsberger should be interesting. Following that, we'll stay in the men's welterweight division as Elizio Capoeira Zaleski dos Santos takes on Zachary Scrogan. That's right, a guy named Zachary's fighting on this card. Elizio Zaleski dos Santos was supposed to take on the absolute killer from Norway. That is Nicholas Dalby. I think he's from Norway. He's from somewhere in that region. I don't know exactly. Might be, I think it is Norway, honestly, if I'm thinking correctly. I don't know. But Nicholas Dalby sadly pulled out, which really made me a sad, you know, that would have been a very easy fight, I should say. But into his place steps the 28-year-old, undefeated 7-0, Zachary Scrogan. He'll take on the 24-8-1, the friggin' 37, Elizio Zaleski dos Santos. 5'11 for Elizio. They have no stats on Scrogan. They picked this guy off the regionals last week. 5'11 for dos Santos, 73-inch reach. He's got an orthodox stance. He's also got a decade of age on Zachary Scrogan. So we'll start with Elizio. Okay, Elizio Zaleski dos Santos, 37 years old, as we mentioned, from Brazil. Of his 24 wins, 17 finishes, including 14 knockouts, 3 submissions. Of his 8 losses, he's been knocked out once and submitted twice. Zaleski, been with the UFC since 2015. He's approaching year 10. He actually fought Dalby in his debut and lost a split decision. But followed that up with an 8-fight winning streak, including wins over Sean Strickland and Omari Akhmedov. Crazy enough, had some fight of the nights, had some finishes, before eventually running into Li Jingliang in 2019, who would knock him out in China. Followed that up with some decision wins, decision losses, eventually winding up taking on Randy Brown of this year when he lost a unanimous decision. Zaleski dos Santos is so talented. I mean, this guy took Fakhretdinov to a majority draw, okay? He beat Benoit Saint-Denis, okay? Tough to beat Benoit Saint-Denis. And, you know, we're feeding this kid, Zachary Scrogan, who, I mean, let's from Kansas, of his 7 wins, 3 KOs, 2 subs, I think Scrogan will have some success. Okay, if I've noticed anything about Zaleski dos Santos, is that you're going to find success on the feet. All right, you're going to find success on the feet. If he wants to take it to the ground, that's where he's going to have success. So if you're Scrogan, shoot for a takedown, try and get him down, try and work him from there. But, I mean, I'd love to pick an underdog in Zach Scrogan, and I really hope he does it. But I got to go with Elizio Zaleski dos Santos. This is truly a seasoned fighter versus a amateur fighter, just about. I mean, dude came right off the regionals yesterday. So, Zachary Scrogan, we share the same first name. I will pray that you win. Maybe I'll have you on the podcast if you'd have me, even though I didn't predict you. But we are going to go with Elizio Zaleski dos Santos. Not even to be safe, just because I just think Elizio Zaleski dos Santos is just better all around. After that, we will be dropping down to the men's bantamweight division as Gaston the Dream Killer Bolanos, love that, takes on Cortavious Romeos. Gaston the Dream Killer, plus 140 underdog. Cortavious, minus 175 favorite. Gaston is 7-4. No, it is not Gaston from, what is it, The Beast? What do they call Princess and the Beast? Beauty and the Beast, that's what it is. Not that Gaston. And Cortavious Romeos is not from the streets. No, no, no. He is 9-2, and he may be at a 3-inch height deficit, 5'7" to 5'4". And he also may be at a reach deficit of 69-68. And he may fight in the southpaw stance. Gaston's in the orthodox. But Cortavious is here to bring the heat. Coming off of Dana White's contender series is Cortavious Romeos. And he picked up a unanimous decision win in August, stepping in here, 30 years old, from St. Louis, Missouri, but now fights out of Wisconsin. Of his 9 wins, 2 KOs and 5 subs, of his 2 losses, he's been knocked out once. That one loss was to Ramon Tavares, and who knocked him out in 29 seconds last October 2023. Did Ramon Tavares ever make his UFC debut? He did. Ramon Tavares is currently 1-0 in the UFC, so Ramon Tavares, a fairy game. His opponent, Gaston Bolanos. Gaston is 32 years old from Peru, but now lives and trains in California. Of his 7 wins, 6 KOs. Of his 4 losses, he's been finished in 3 of them. Once by KO, twice by sub, and most recently, he was knocked out in January by Marcus McGee. But Marcus McGee is such a killer. Actually, I gotta get some Marcus McGee fight news. Love that guy. Gaston, Cortavious, very even fight. Never know what you're gonna get. I think something's going down on the feet. I'm gonna give this one to Cortavious Romeos. I mean, his only loss in the UFC, I guess under a UFC banner promotion, if that's what you consider, Dana White's contender series, is to Ramon Tavares, who I know took Sergey Sadé to some tough fights, and we just saw Sergey Sadé fight last weekend. We know how good he is. As for Gaston, he got finished pretty badly. He is a wannabe Itopira. He literally looks just like Itopira in the face, so we'll see what happens, but I am probably going to be backing Cortavious in this one. I'm sorry, Gaston. I truly am sorry. After that, we will be in the main card proportion of this card, and I do believe this will remain on the main card as we head to the women's strawweight division as Carolina Kowalski takes on Denise Gomez. And neither of these women, I believe, are in the rankings. They used to be in the rankings. I wonder what happened. Carolina, 16-8, is the plus 320 underdog. Denise Gomez at 9-3 is the minus 430 favorite. Ugh. Carolina, 16-8. Denise, 9-3. 5'3" to 5'2" gives Carolina 1 inch in height. She also has 1 inch reach, 64-63. Both women stand in the orthodox fighting position. Carolina, man, she has been around a long, long time. Carolina, 39 years old from Poland. Of her 16 wins, she has only had 4 finishes, 1 KO and 3 subs. Of her 8 losses, she has only been finished 3 times. That's right, out of her 24 professional bouts, they've only ever ended under the bell 6 times. That's insane. That's utterly insane. I can't even believe that. That just seems made up. Carolina, decision machine, been with the UFC since 2015. Actually fought Joanna Jan Jacek for the women's strawweight belt in 2016. Has a win over Rosa Muniz in a fight of the night, oddly. At one point was on a 5-fight losing streak. Losses to Jessica Andrade, Michelle Warson Gomez, Alexa Grasso, Yan Chon, and Jessica Penne before going on a 4-fight win streak against Felice Herrig, Gomez Juarez, Vanessa Demopoulos, and Diana Belbita, which was her last win in October of 2023. Her lone fight this year in May, she took on the young up-and-coming Yasmin Lucindo, who beat her handsomely by unanimous decision. 39 years old, plus 320 underdog. The odds are stacked against the lady from Poland, which is Carolina, because she takes on the killer. Denise Gomez, 24 years old, from Brazil, but now actually lives and trains in Las Vegas. Of her 9 wins, 6 KOs. Of her 3 losses, she's been KO'd once. Not in the UFC so far, where she has a 3-2 record. My bad. Lost her debut to Luma Luke Boomy, getting out grappled. She followed that up with a round 2 knockout of Bruna Brazil, then a 20-second performance of the night knockout over Yasmin Jeroguai. She would drop a unanimous decision to Angela Hill in 2023 before picking up a split decision win over Eduarda Mora in June of this year. I'm sorry, Denise Gomez, 15 years her senior. I mean, come on, it's Denise Gomez all day. In senior, I think I meant younger. 15 years her younger, I should say. Of her 9 wins, 6 KOs, she's coming to take off Carolina's head. And, you know, Carolina has been finished in a long time. I think this may be the time it happens. Give me Denise Gomez. It's a no-brainer for me. I'm not even going to entertain the statistics here. Middleweight action up next for you as Mansoor Abdulmalik makes his UFC debut against Dusko Thunder Todorovic. Mansoor 6-0, Dusko 12-4. 6'2" to 6'1" gives Mansoor 1 inch in height, and he has 5 inches in reach, 79-74. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Mansoor is a -375 favorite. Dusko is a +280 underdog. Mansoor coming, of course, from Dana White's Contender Series, got around to TKO in August. The 27-year-old is from Maryland, and all 6 of his wins have come by finish. 5 KOs, 1 sub. And all of those 6 wins have come in round 1, except his Dana White's Contender Series fight, which went into round number 2. So Mansoor is an absolute killer, is what you're meaning to tell me. Handled Wes Schultz on the Contender Series, dealt with some takedown issues in round number 2, but after getting taken down on 2 of 5 attempts, he would actually reverse it and get a TKO on the ground. So, crazy stuff for Mansoor. I'll be excited to see how his debut goes as he takes on someone who's just had the taste of UFC given to him so harshly, Dusko Todorovic, the underdog. 30 years old from Serbia. Out of his 12 wins, he has 11 finishes, 8 KOs, 3 subs. Out of his 4 losses, he's been finished 3 times. He was actually supposed to fight Edmund Shahbazyan in March, but pulled out of that fight. Dusko, been with the UFC since 2020, won on the Contender Series in 2019, came in, gets a round 2 TKO, and gets knocked out by Punahele Soriano. Then gets brutalized against Gregory Rodriguez through 3 rounds. Then knocks out Makia Patillo. Then gets brutally elbow knocked out by Chidi and Chukani. Then in 2022, his last win, he would knock out Jordan Wright in a fight of the night. Then he had one fight in 2023 where he got injured, but he's back in action, ready to bring it. I mean, let's look at some of the names that have beaten him. Gregory Rodriguez, Chidi and Chukani, Christian Leroy Duncan, and that fight ended by injury 2 minutes in, okay? Dusko's game. He's here to play. And this is just one of those fights. This is just one of those fights. It strikes me. I don't remember Mansoor from the Contender Series. I really don't. He's a big favorite. But there's just some about when guys like him make their debut. They take on a guy in Dusko Todorovic who has been here and knows what to do. And then again, I don't know. There's just some about these guys that make their debut. This is going to go one of two ways. All right, and it's true. I know there's only 2 outcomes in this fight. One wins, one loses. But whenever someone who's undefeated makes their debut off like the Contender Series, and they're taking on a guy who's been here for a bit, maybe not seasoned, but has been in the UFC for a bit, they either get a great finish or get brutally humbled in round 1. So I don't see this fight going past round 1. It's either going to be make or break, and I will give the -375 favorite a make or break. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. We'll go with Mansoor Abdulmalik. But I would not be surprised if Dusko pulls something out of his bag of tricks and shockingly wins. I don't think it's going to happen, but you never know. Last women's fight of the evening as we head to some ranked women's strawweights as the number 13th ranked Luiana Pinheiro takes on the number 14th ranked Jillian the Savage Robertson. Luiana Pinheiro 11-3, the Savage 14-8. 5'5" to 5'2" gives Jillian 3 inches in height, and she has 1 inch reach, 63-62. Orthodox stance for both of these ladies. Luiana +200, Jillian -265. Luiana Pinheiro, 30 years old, from Brazil. Of her 11 wins, 2 KOs and 5 subs. Of her 3 losses, she's been finished twice. And is sadly on a 2-fight losing streak. You know, started our UFC run 3-0 in the UFC. Wins over Sam Hughes, Michelle Marcin Gomez, a DQ win against Random Marcos. Then runs into Amanda Ribas in November of 2023. Gets hit with a crazy spinning back kick, a couple punches, and she went down. Then, May of this year, takes on Angela Hill. And Angela Hill gets her first career submission at 39 years old. So Luiana Pinheiro not coming in with any momentum. I mean, truly none, as she takes on Jillian Robertson, who is coming in with all the momentum. Jillian, 39 years old, from Canada. I mean, come on. We couldn't get her on the Canadian card. They're doing her so freaking dirty. It actually pisses me off. Out of her 14 wins, 11 finishes, 2 KOs and 9 subs. Out of her 8 losses, she's been finished twice. Jillian, she has earned her dues. Been with the UFC since 2017, and in year 7 is finally getting a crack to move up into the top 10. Jillian, I mean, you know, started off her UFC career pretty much going 2 wins, a loss. 2 wins, a loss. 2 wins, a loss. And some of these losses, Myra Bueno Silva fought for a belt. Macy Barber, number 4 woman in the world. Talia Santos took Valentina Shevchenko to a split decision. Miranda Maverick, top 15 fighter. The J.J. Aldridge loss. We're getting to 2022. Bad loss. Shouldn't have lost that. Then, rear naked choke of Maria Agapova. Armbar Pierre Rodriguez. Takes Tabitha Ricci to a decision in June of 2023. Then this year comes around. Kicks off the year with a brutal TKO of Poliana Viana. Then absolutely out-grapples Michelle Warson Gomez to death. Retires her at UFC 303. Michelle's coming in. Jillian's coming in with all the momentum of the world. And she keeps it here. And I think she submits Luiana Pinheiro in round number two. That's my prediction. Give me Jillian Robertson, 39 years old, coming into your prime. Reminds me of Charles Johnson in the men's flyweight division. You know, Glover Teixeira, now's the time to make a run if you're Jillian Robertson. And let's say you beat the number 13th ranked Luiana Pinheiro. You move to the number 13 spot. Then, you know, you have a loss to the number 10. You take on the number 11th ranked Lupi Godinez. You win that. You then take on the number 8th ranked Amanda Ribas. After that, the number 4 ranked Jessica Andrade. And all of a sudden, a title shot is in your future. Let's do this, Jillian. They robbed you of not fighting in Canada. That's just annoying. Next up, I think this is going to be the main event. We're going to go over the current co-main event that's listed, but I don't think this is going to be the co-main event. I'm going to actually say what I think is going to be the co-main event after this. So, bantamweight action, Ricky Tercios takes on Bernardo Lion King Sopage. It was supposed to be the third from last fight, but since Cody Garbrandt and Miles Johns was unfortunately canceled from the card, Cody Garbrandt withdrew. We're not going to have time to really, I mean, from the podcast, I guess I could have time to update everyone online if a replacement comes, but I am recording this Wednesday night on the 6th. By the time the 9th comes around, I mean, there's a two-day difference. I'm not going to know if any changes take place. So we will leave Cody Garbrandt and Miles Jones out of the equation. Sucks that got eliminated, but I doubt this is actually the co-main event. But Ricky Tercios, 13-4, Bernardo Sopage, 11-3. 5'9 to 5'6. Ricky is 3 inches taller, and he has a notable 5 inches in reach, 71 to 66. His height is 3 inches more. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Ricky Tercios is actually an Ultimate Fighter winner. Somehow this guy has won an Ultimate Fighter. I have no idea. 31 years old from Texas. Out of those 13 wins, he has 4 finishes, 3 KOs, 1 sub. Out of his 4 losses, he's been KO'd once and subbed once. Tercios is just, he fights a boring style, not really a relatable or likable dude. I mean, won a split decision against Brady Eisted to win the Ultimate Fighter. Then Amin Zahabi ran through him. Then he beats Kevin Natividad. Then Raul Rosas Jr. humbles him in June and submits him in round two. I mean, he goes out to touch gloves and flicks off, basically says F you to Raul Rosas Jr. And Raul's like, what the heck? Takes him down, submits him with a rear naked chokehold. Simple as that. It's pretty satisfying. But Ricky, I mean, dude is just, he fights an odd style. You know, he stays on the outside, throws weird angles, nothing too spectacular. I don't know what to do with this guy. His opponent, Bernardo, 24 years old, from Albania, but now lives and trains in Sweden. Of those 11 wins, 10 finishes, 7 KOs and 3 subs. And one of his three losses is by knockout. And that was actually in his last fight, where he took on the dangerous bantamweight Vinicius Oliveira. And in a fight of the night, I mean, this was an absolute war, with 19 seconds left, he gets hit with one of the nastiest flying knees I've ever seen. Oh, it was so bad. One of the knockout of the year contenders. It's in the top 5 right now for knockouts of the year. Holy cow. And I mean, he pushed Vinicius to the limit. You know, Vinicius took over in round 3, but Bernardo won round 1. Bernardo won round 2. So this guy is super game. I think he's super legit. And let's not judge him off a loss to an absolute killer with 19 seconds left in a fight he was winning. We're going to give this one to Bernardo. And I'm going to say, you know, he's got 7 KOs and 3 subs. I'm going to say we get a little knockout here. Round 1 knockout, courtesy of Bernardo Sopage. We're not going to judge him off the Vinicius Oliveira performance. No, and I do not think. You know, this will be his second UFC fight, so we'll judge from there. But from what I saw from his fight and what I've seen from Ricky Tercios' last few fights, I think Bernardo should manhandle him in the striking department. Be careful of getting taken down by Ricky, but we are going to ride with Bernardo Sopage. And with that, we get into what I think will be the new co-main event, a middleweight matchup between GM3, Gerald Meerschaert, and the Dutch Knight, Rainer De Ridder. All right, this is going to be a great matchup. I'm actually, like, this is one of those fights you're like, what? This is happening? Gerald Meerschaert, 37-17. Rainer De Ridder, 17-2. 6-1 for Gerald, 77-inch reach, southpaw stance for both these gentlemen. They didn't upload Rainer De Ridder stats. You gotta be freaking kidding me, guys. Okay, come on, UFC stats. Get your game together. We'll start with Gerald Meerschaert for a second, okay? How about the most submissions in middleweight history? I mean, come on. this guy, plus 215 underdog, 36 years old, from Wisconsin. Out of those 37 wins, he's got 34 finishes, 6 KOs, 29 subs. 29 of his 37 wins have came by submission. Now, out of those 17 losses, he has been finished 12 times, 4 by knockout, 8 by sub, and all of his UFC wins have came by finish. I think he's 14 or 12. He either has 12 or 14 UFC wins. I think it's 12, actually. So he's 12 UFC wins, all by finish, and I mean, such a fun fighter. Been with the UFC since 2016. He's fought in Thiago Santos. He's fought in Jack Hermanson, Kevin Holland, Eric Anders, Khamzat Chimaev. I mean, this guy has fought in the best of the best. Last time he lost, August of 2023, split decision. Since then, 2-0 this year, both round two submissions. Submitted Brian Barberina in March, submitted Edmin Shahbazyan in a fight where he lost round one pretty badly, fights back in round two and gets an arm triangle and a 50K performance bonus. GM3, one of the fun fighters, one of the legends of the middleweight division. He probably won't go to the Hall of Fame, but man, he's going to be memorable to all the fans, except he takes on an absolute legend here in Rainer Dayridder, making his UFC debut. Rainer Dayridder, 34 years old, from the Netherlands. Of those 17 wins, 3 KOs and 12 subs. Both of his losses have came by KO to the same guy, Anatoly. This guy was a champion in ONE Championship Fighting. That is right. You are looking at a former champion here. Rainer Dayridder, multiple title defenses. Actually, can I pull up Rainer Dayridder quickly on Google? I mean, this guy, the fact he's joined the UFC, a former champion. We're getting Kaya Sakura this year. We're getting Rainer Dayridder. We are getting absolutely spoiled. I mean, I'm trying to think of, you know, he was the middleweight world champion and the ONE light heavyweight champion. Insane. He's 6'3", wow, and 79-inch reach. Wow, he has the height and the reach on this guy. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. That's absolutely crazy. 15 of his 17 wins by finish. Yeah, he lost to Anatoly Malchin, who unfortunately was just his kryptonite, finished him in round one and round three. But before that, he was 16-0, undefeated, won the middleweight championship in, I believe it was 2017. Actually, no, won it in 2017, had 1, 2, 3, 4 multiple title defenses. Oh my gosh, he's a 2-time, 3-time. Oh my gosh, he has so many title defenses. This guy's an absolute killer. Rainer Dayridder, Gerald Meerschaert. Look, I'm sorry, Gerald, you're taking on a former ONE FC champion. Yeah, you already know. Give me Rainer Dayridder by a round one submission, too. I think he's coming in with dominance. If GM3 humbles him, though, that would be hilarious. But I just think, I know there's different promotions, it's different parts of the globe, but the competition Rainer Dayridder was fighting, I think, should translate to a win for him. We'll have to see. I'm backing him without a doubt. I thought this should have been the co-main event from the get-go, and I think it will be moved to the co-main event spot. Exciting stuff. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we get into the main event, the final fight of the evening for UFC Vegas 100. Could have been better, yeah. You know, but I'm not going to complain. All right, because we get the number 15th ranked men's welterweight, Neil the Asian Sensation Magny, the ultimate gatekeeper, as he takes on one of the scariest fighters this year. If he wins this, he will be the debut fighter, the rookie of the year for 2024, Carlos the Nightmare Prates. And by the way, Carlos Prates has never fought in a 5-round fight in his life, has never fought in a main event before, has never fought a ranked opponent, is the minus 670 favorite. Neil Magny, plus 475. Alrighty, who should we begin with? Who do we even begin with here? I mean, Neil Magny, 29-13, veteran of the sport. Carlos Prates, 20-6. 6'3 to 6'1, Neil's got 2 inches in height. He also has 2 inches in reach, 80-78. Switch stance for Carlos, orthodox for Neil Magny. We'll start with the veteran. We'll start with Neil Magny, 37 years old, from Illinois. Of those 29 wins, he's gotten 12 finishes, 8 KOs and 4 subs. Actually, in January this year, his last win, he got a TKO, fun fact. Now, out of those 13 losses, he has been finished 9 times, unfortunately. But Neil, legend of the game. He's had main events before. He's fought in the best of the best. At one point, I mean, this dude was on a 7-fight win streak before running into Damian Maia. Was once on a 3-fight win streak before running into Lawrence Larkin. You know, he's beaten Johnny Hendricks, Kelvin Gastelum, Hector Lombard. He's beaten Carlos Condit. He's fought in Rafael Dos Anjos. He's been brutally knocked out by Santiago Ponzinibbio. You know, he's beaten Li Jingliang, Robbie Lawler, Jeff Neal, Max Griffin. Listen to some of the guys that have beaten him. Shavkat Rakhmonov. Then he goes out and beats Daniel Rodriguez. Gilbert Burns. Then he goes out and beats Phil Rowe. Ian Garry. Then he goes out and beats Mike Mallon. And Michael Morales in August was his last defeat. But this is a special occasion, if you ask me, for Neil Magny. Because if we kind of look at, you know, his loss to Chiesa in 2021, takes on Jeff Neal, who he casually outboxes. Takes on Max Griffin, who he wins a split decision over. I never thought he should have won. Takes on Shafkat Rakhmonov. We all know Shafkat won. Takes on Daniel Rodriguez. Beats him. Lesser than Shafkat. Takes on Gilbert Burns, who is higher level than Daniel Rodriguez. Drops down to Phil Rowe, beats him. Drops up to Ian Garry. Ian Garry is far better than Neil Magny. Takes on Mike Mallon. Mike is winning the fight. Mike won 14 minutes of the fight. Loses in the final 15 seconds, okay? Takes on Michael Morales. Michael just ran through him in August. Knocked him out on the feet. TKO'd him. It was brutal. All right? So Neil Magny, the ultimate gatekeeper. It takes a lot to beat him. Does Carlos Prates have what it takes? By the way, Neil Magny has not lost back-to-back fights since 2013. Fun fact. Holy cow. Carlos Prates, the favorite. Not the top guy, though. He's looking to move into the rankings. The 31-year-old from Brazil is currently on a 10-fight win streak. Of his 20 wins, 18 finishes, 15 KOs, 3 subs. Of his 6 losses, he has been finished 5 times. Those losses haven't come in 5 years, though. Carlos Prates was actually supposed to fight Randy Brown at UFC 309, and the UFC gave him a call and was like, hey, we don't have a main event for this November 9th card. How about instead of fighting at Madison Square Garden, we give you a main event? He was like, hell yeah, count me in. And Carlos Prates has wound up here. After competing on Dana White's Contender Series in August of 2023 and getting a knockout, he was signed to the UFC. Debuts in February of this year, 50K performance bonus when he knocks Trevin Giles out cold with a punch. Holy cow. Following that up in June, how about a round one finish of Charles Radke? We already mentioned him. Absolutely brutal. 50K. Fought again in August. Round two knockout of Li Jingliang where he dropped him 3 times and became the first man to knock out the Leech. Carlos Prates, 3-0 this year. All knockouts. This is insane. He's currently on a little round 2-1. Round 2-1. So my opinion, he gets a round 1 knockout of Neil Magny. Carlos Prates is scary. Right? Carlos Prates is scary. He might knock him out in round 2 or 3, but I mean, he's beaten Neil Magny. Truly, I believe this. Neil Magny is not on the level that I've seen Carlos Prates on. Carlos Prates, he's young, he's hungry, 31, he's in his prime, he's out here knocking guys out. He fights with the Fighting Nerds, okay? Fighting Nerds, one of the best gyms I've ever seen. Mauricio Rufi, 10-1, all finishes, fighting in 2 weeks. Gene Silva, runner-up for Fighter of the Year, potentially, or Rookie of the Year, I should say. He's coming to the UFC this year, all knockouts. Kyle Barallo went from unranked to now the number 4 men's bantamweight, or men's middleweight, I should say, in the world. He's with an incredible gym. He has an incredible team. And I think Carlos Prates will have an incredible performance and move into the top 15. Carlos Prates, take it to the bank, lock it in. That's my official prediction. And ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude today's episode. Let me know what you guys think about NFL Week 10 and also about your Vegas U100 predictions. I was about to say Vegas something, but yeah, UFC Vegas 100. After that, we head to Madison Square Garden, then to China, then we take Thanksgiving off, then we got UFC 310, which who knows what that'll be, and we end the year in Tampa, Florida with Ian Garry, Joaquin Buckley. Should be fun. Probably going to have a chill weekend, guys. I'm very busy. I'm still trying to get into a class right now, so I have a meeting with the dean on Friday. I am just a busy little bee. That's all I do. I might need new tires, too. Who knows what's going on in the life of your host, Zachary Ruger. But what I do know is I'll catch all of you beauties next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.